This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo here. Welcome, everybody, in the U.S. and around the world. We are thrilled that you could join us today for a great show. And we've got a great guest, as always. This gentleman, tremendous experience. And if you have ever had a dream job, well, he's got the dream job, and I'll explain it. And he's been in the game a long time, but also now works for the American Baseball Coaches Association. That is the ABCA, the best baseball Coaches Association in the world, the largest, the best convention. He'll tell you all about it. We're looking forward to talking to him, and then we'll tell you a little bit about him. He is the executive director of the ABCA and coaching outreach, high school youth travel liaison. We're going to get into that because that's going to be interesting to talk about that. Ryan Brownlee, the American college baseball coach also. He's a former, Western Illinois. Not an alumni, but I went there a year, so I guess, partial alumni somehow. Western Illinois, he was the baseball coach there. Played four seasons under his fantastic college baseball coach, Jim Brownlee, at Evansville. Also independent ball coached. He was in Iowa, the recruiting coordinator for nine seasons with the Hawkeyes. He had 32 players he recruited, coached, were drafted by major league teams. Listen, just a great person, knows the game really well. He has an incredible job to promote the game of baseball in the U.S. and also around the world for the ABCA. So let's not even waste any time, folks. You know, we like to get going right away. Let me welcome Ryan Brownlee. What's up, Ryan? How you doing, buddy?
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Doing all right. I'm glad that we could get you on. I know this is probably not the best season, time of the season for you.
No, it's great.
It's starting to rock and roll.
No, this is a great time. Really our busiest time is with the convention. And, that's where it really ramps up. And there's a lot of planning. And we're already having meetings for next year's convention. And next week, we actually go to, 2 weeks. We go March 17th through the 19th. We'll actually go to Washington, D.C. for our initial site visit to go over everything. And that's how much planning goes into the convention. And it doesn't just happen. And to get 7,200 coaches there and make everything run smooth, you do really want it to be a great experience for everybody. So there is a lot of planning. And honestly, I'm just riding coattails. The people in the office, what Craig Kylitz and John Litchfield and Juan Clark's been with us forever, 18 years now with the ABCA. What those guys have done to take it to where it was, 6-7 years ago to where it is now. It's amazing to see the growth that we've had from a membership standpoint, but then from the convention. And it is a huge production with the convention. And I know I saw you briefly, and sorry about your dad. Obviously it's never great timing for that, but I do apologize and sorry for your loss on that.
Yeah, and on that, I want to thank the ABCA, Craig Kylitz, Dave, all the people at the office there. Good friend of mine, J.R. Richardson, little shout out to J.R. just started with you guys too long ago. I just want to thank you guys because, you reached out and with the condolences, the nice card. Craig left a message. He was calling me, what a great organization, great leadership, and then all the way down to everybody that works there. And your planning, you're talking about, 5 years in advance, I believe you have everything locked in with all
that. I think we're all the way past 2025 now. And back up on that, for me, that's baseball. That's what baseball guys do. It's such a tight community and small group. Somebody's going to know somebody, but we're all affected. And we've had it's been a tough preseason with everything that's gone on. And it's still happening. We've had guys get sick here lately. But as we get older, those are the things that happen. But, we are such a tight community, and you feel like everybody in the baseball community, coaching community. And that's what makes everything so great. And that's what makes the ABCA great is just the coaching fraternity.
Absolutely. And they're all open to sharing things. I mean, it is a great organization. And, you know, I've been in it now 38th year. And, you know, things have obviously changed, but that's normal. You know, it changes for the best. Yep. Every year, something better. Since we're on the ABCA, we've talked about the ABCA convention online before on the podcast many times. But, you know, I want people to know what's a little different, you know, like from last year to this year, to the Nashville convention.
You know, just as far as the DC one coming up or,
Let's go back. Let's go back before the Nashville.
Yep.
And then into Nashville, what was different that, and maybe we can get into also if you have some plans you can share.
For me personally or, you know, professionally, because obviously helping run the thing is way different than just being there attending as a coach. You know, the biggest changes that we made this year, when I took the job September 1, that was part of the interview process as we talked about the convention. And Dallas, from an attendee standpoint was awesome, but they weren't equipped to handle the food situation. And so we are very cognizant of when we send out, the questionnaires to the coaches that are there, like what was good, what wasn't good. And a lot of the responses back from Dallas was that it took too long to get food. So that was really a point of contention for us this year with Nashville, was to make sure that everybody had opportunities to get food in a timely manner. And so the vendor area, this was new this year, is we added a food area in the vendor area. And I know the vendors appreciated that because they probably have a harder time than anybody trying to get food in during the convention because they're locked into where they're at. So that was a big adjustment. And then we filmed everything this year. You know, the expo theater was filmed, the Q&As were filmed, the youth stage was filmed. And I think that added something really nice, not just for the attendees, because then you don't feel like you're having to hit everything or you're scrambling around. And, so everything is filmed. So if you miss something, it's not a big deal. And then we did add live streaming in this year, that we got quite a few people to sign up for the live stream. And so next year we're just trying to continue and hone in some things. Our executive board meeting is in Omaha during the College World Series. So any initiatives that we want to implement for next year, we're going to have to get executive board approval first. So I can't talk as much about next year, but sure. July 1, we should be able to get on and talk about some of the new stuff that's going to go on next year. And I think the app was a great addition as well. You know, we had the app the last couple years before Nashville, to help people with the organization of the convention. But now the MyABCA app, you can get on there and there's a lot of coaching resources on there. There's videos. JR's done a really good job with the video content. He's so talented from the video content. And even the videos that were getting put out during the convention, those small snippets, he and I were roommates at the Opryland. He was staying up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning to try to get those videos done. And it was amazing the quality of work that he was putting together in such a short amount of time. We were all taking video, but we'd upload it to our Dropbox file. And JR was editing it. It was amazing to watch him work during the convention.
Wow. Yeah, I'm very familiar with JR. You guys landed a good one there.
He's awesome.
And congratulations to him because, he was doing different odds and ends in baseball and finally hooked up and, being able to hook up with the ABCA not only is a great, great job, I'm sure, but in the future could also lead to other things. So,
he's a good example of what we've all done in baseball. We've all had to, work at a golf course somewhere. We've all had to, I've harvested, I've flipped apartments. I gave plasma. Like, that's just what you did. And, you pull for guys like him that you're able to get into a great situation, because there's a lot of guys out there that don't get great opportunities that may be baseball lifers that are just grinding away and maybe never get a great opportunity. And that's baseball.
And folks, Ryan Brownlee's got a lot of hats that he's got to fill there at the ABCA. Every staff member, I'm sure, does. And here's an interesting one. He is the host of the podcast. I'd say the most popular podcast out there. I listen to it all the time and always learning something. I'm glad two things, Ryan.
And Pete, I can't, obviously I'm riding coattails on that too. And Jeremy, Sheets did such a good job of getting it. He recorded 140 plus episodes. So, I'm on the tail end of it, and he did a great job. And obviously that's a huge kudos to him for starting it and having the vision of starting it. And then hopefully I can just add on to what he started.
Absolutely. Very important to the coaches. You know, that's something that, you know, you can listen to anytime. You listen to it in parts. You can also, you know, take it. I mean, I've been in Russia and I was in Cuba and I was listening to it, you know, constantly. I think I've heard every episode. But the other thing is, I'm glad for all the videotaping because, you know, as you know, I missed it. I was only there for the Thursday. And now I'm catching up, and it's really great because you can catch up at your own time.
Exactly. And, you know, JR did a great job of getting those turned around as well. And I think this was the quickest that the videos have been uploaded to everybody. And that's a nice touch with the app now, too, is any of the videos that you get, you know, any of the conventions that you've been to, they get uploaded to your profile on your app. So it's much more user-friendly from a technology standpoint with everything going through the app now.
And I love the app where, you know, you can ask questions and other coaches answer those questions from different parts of the world and country.
Yep, that's just, again, continuing to build a community in the baseball community and giving multiple avenues for people to reach out to each other and feel more connected.
All right. Now, listen, Ryan, one of the things I really want to get into because you're one of your positions, and I think this is one of the greatest things that the ABCA started along with everything else. They've really gone to another level, and that is the communication between youth baseball, travel baseball, and high school baseball. Of course, high school baseball has been with the ABCA for a long time, but especially the youth and the travel baseball, simply because that's a background I come from for 40 years, you know, helping younger coaches, helping coaches at the younger levels. Tell us about what your goal, you know, what you're working on there, and something, and we'll get into a little bit some of the challenges too, because there are going to be some challenges.
Yeah, after the convention in Nashville, I did the Virginia Clinic, the Indiana Clinic, the Iowa Clinic, and the Illinois Clinic, and then the last two weekends I did USA Baseball Clinics up in DC. So that's where the coaching outreach comes into, where you're trying to get out there and see coaches. And you talk to any of the upper level coaches, they're going to tell you that that's probably the most important part is the youth coaches out there. And that's where we're having guys or women that maybe have never coached that are interacting with kids for the first time. And that's why I tried to stress last weekend up in DC with Rob Haney's clinic for the Northern Virginia Travel Baseball League and USA Baseball. Mm-hmm. I told the coaches in that room, I said, you know what? Some of the kids that you coach may not be good enough to play high school baseball, and that's okay. But your responsibility is to maybe have them have a great experience. So even if they don't continue to play into high school, they maybe want to coach, because some of those kids out there might end up being great coaches. And some of the best coaches that I had growing up and on the youth circuit, and it didn't matter what sport, basketball, soccer, baseball, football, even played tennis a little bit. I don't even know if those coaches played in high school or college, but I know they were great coaches. And that's not the most important thing, is how long you play. You can have great coaches out there that maybe didn't play for a long time. But I said that's your responsibility. Have them have a great experience so they love the game of baseball. And if they're not good enough to keep playing, they still want to give back to the game.
Absolutely. Now, I got to tell you, you know, I mean, we've talked about it on the show a great deal. I know a lot of coaches around the country understand this, but we just got to keep plugging away. You know, when we're talking about our volunteers, especially, you know, they're giving up their time, you know, their efforts to be with these kids, to help them. It's not their full-time job. And I'm sure in Major League Baseball and USA Baseball have recognized this, as you know, and they've developed programs also to promote the game. But, you know, if we don't train these coaches properly, it's very simple. I mean, if they're not any good, then the kids are going to quit and they're going to find another sport. That's just common sense. You know, and as we go around the world, which, by the way, thank you to the ABCA for being an ISG sponsor. You know, we've been showing the videotapes around the world of the ABCA and been promoting it. But as you go around the world, if the coaches that are volunteers there also, if they're not good, they're not even getting, you know, they're not going to get players to play the game, and they need to get them to play. So you've got to have great coaching at the younger levels, and that's why I love what the ABCA is doing.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be rocket science. You know, have energy, have a little bit of planning. You don't have to know everything. And I know, you know, when you're first starting out coaching, you can feel lost. We all felt lost when we first started coaching. But there's great resources out there if you're willing to spend the time, and you don't have to know everything. You don't feel like you have to know everything, because that's not the case. You can be a great coach, and you can give great resources to your players if you just have a little bit of energy when you show up and run a really good practice. You can be organized. I played for Quentin Merkle at Memorial High School, and he coached Don Mattingly and was a 50-year coach, and I ended up having a pretty good career in college hitting, and I don't think we ever really talked mechanics. The only mechanics stuff we would do is we'd watch Gary Ward's video, the interlocking sequences of parts. Yes. But he was smart enough to know that, and so we had a bunch of stations set up. We would be in a stride box. We would have the old Velcro, the Gordy Gillespie Velcro straps around our elbows. You know, we would be catching balls. He had these, you know, it was a baseball grip, but it had a net on the end that we would catch wiffle balls. But then he was way ahead of his time. When we got in the batting cage, the jugs machine was cranked up to 10, and you had to try to hit off a jugs machine that was going, felt like 1,000 miles an hour in high school, but you just had to get in there and try to find a way to get the barrel on the ball. But, you know, Coach Merkle had a great 50-year career. I think he's the second all-time winningest coach in the state of Indiana behind Doug Schreiber's dad, who's now passed away. But I think he's second in Indiana. But it was, you know, ahead of his time on some things. We did some mental imagery back then. We did breathing mm-hmm. techniques. And I don't – nobody was doing stuff back then in the early 90s. But Coach was all about winning and competing, and I think he found that those were the best ways to get us to compete.
Yeah, Ryan, and, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, the game is speeding up so fast in a lot of ways when it comes to education. Well, technology's changed us in many ways, and I'm not talking about just the technology of – the devices that we're using to get better in the development of the game. But I'm also talking about, you know, the social media. There's so much more information. What's your advice out there, whether it be the youth coaches or whether it be even older coaches? Because I know I'm having a tough time, and I do it full time. I'm having a tough time keeping up with the progress of the game. It's speeding up so fast. What's your advice for coaches to kind of sit back and slow down a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I did email you that. I feel like I'm a lifelong learner, and a lot of things that I've picked up over the years have been trial and error. And 22 years of coaching Division I baseball and 16 of those on the heavier recruiting side, you can get railroaded. So, you know, one, make sure you take your time. You know, you're going to get inundated with information, and there's so much information and great information out there. Don't feel like you have to learn all of it at once, because you're not going to retain most of it anyway. So pick one or two things that you really want to center in, and be able to separate when you need to as well. The great thing about the phone is you can get instant access to everything, but you're also going to be, there's going to be some downfalls with that as well, because you're going to feel like you're linked into it 24/7. So even if it's for 30 minutes at a time, put it down. You know, I emailed you that 2 years ago. I took all notifications off my phone, and I'm sure people out there are like, you're insane, especially with social media, like with Twitter, with Instagram. You know, I don't have Snapchat, but even with emails, even with text messaging, if you have all your notifications set up to your phone, it's going to be ding, 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 ding. And then it becomes just a habit loop. And I talked about that on the high school circuit. You know, your phone is trained for you to look at it, because it's either going to vibrate or it's going to ding. And then you're going to check, and then you're going to get that response. And that's just how that habit loop works. And you do that for 2 or 3 days straight, you're going to end up picking your phone up, and you don't even know why you're picking your phone up. And so sometimes you have to be able to separate that out. And I'm such a firm believer in trying to be in the present moment and whatever you're doing. I don't care if that's coaching or how you live your life or with your family, really try to be present at all times. And that's a really hard thing to do. And I'm still trying to strive and get better at it. But from, you know, just from some tips out there for coaches, like, just don't feel like you have to try to dive in on everything. Pick up one or two things here and there. And then also don't forget about what makes you good. I think sometimes, and you see that at the convention a lot, you know, there's so much good information out there. And you know, from the college side, you spent all fall with your team. You go to the convention and you see some really good tips. And then you come back and you're working with your guys and you're like, okay, we're going to do this now. We're going to do this now. And then we're going to do this now. And with 18 to 23 year old kids now, they're smart. I'm sure in the back of their mind are like, well, what do we do from August, September, and October? What did we just work on? And now we're going to completely change everything. And, you know, every program is different. And so really find what works for you. And I don't care if that's a little league coach, find what works for you. And yes, add some new things in here and there. But if you have things that are really working, stay with those things.
Mm. Hey, folks, listen, I want you to make sure that wherever you are in the U.S. or around the world, check out abca.org, check the website out, become a member. It will be the greatest thing you'll ever do. You get so much information, so much stuff, communication. Obviously, if you can afford it, then go to the convention. That is money well spent. Check out Ryan on Twitter. Well, first of all, the ABCA on Twitter at ABCA1945. And then Ryan is on coachb_ABCA. I'll put all that stuff on the show notes, but
I'll throw my email address out there too. It's just rbrownlee@abca.org. That's what we're here for. So I don't care any questions. I was born in baseball as well. You know, we moved to Evansville in 1979. So my dad could be the coach at the University of Evansville. And I was talking to him the other day. He and I talk a lot more now. When I was growing up and he was coaching, my relationship was much tighter with my mom. And then having the opportunity to play for my dad and brother, I got to be a lot closer with my dad. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to actually play for my dad in college, because, you know, anybody out there that's been in a household with a coach, you know, you don't always have some of those times growing up, because they're either at the field. And back then my dad was officiating basketball games and officiating football games. And at Evansville, he had to teach classes. So growing up, you didn't get a chance to interact with them as much. And anybody out there that has kids that are good enough to play, I tell guys all the time that, hey, if you have an opportunity to let them play for you in college, do it. I would never go back and do anything different. I had other schools that I was looking at, but the best decision I made was to play for my dad in college.
You know what? I'm so glad you brought that up, and I'll tell you why, because I want to get your advice for the younger coaches, the youth, the travel coaches that have their sons or daughters on the team, some advice on how to handle that, because that can't be easy.
And I never had to do that. My son Jackson, he's 17 now. He played up and through freshman year of high school. But I think because my dad didn't coach me growing up either, I wanted other coaches to coach him growing up. And then I thought if I was still coaching and he was good enough and he wanted to play for me, then we'd cross that bridge when we'd get there. But he runs track now. He's a good track athlete. And you know, he made a mature decision after his freshman year, because he was doing track and baseball, and he decided to give up baseball to focus on track, which it was a very mature decision. Probably a tough decision for him, having a dad who's a college baseball coach, to make that decision to stop playing. So I give him a lot of credit for actually making a mature decision like that. It's not the easiest thing in the world to coach your own kid, and then you know, but again, I wouldn't have traded that for the world playing for my dad. I think you have to be able to separate. People would laugh at us. My brother played for my dad as well. So my dad had 8 straight years of a son playing for him in college. My brother went for it. So that was probably a little easier for me, because my dad actually had gone through it with my brother for 4 years. I think you have to be able to separate. In order for it to work, you know, there's going to be your time, your family time, but then there's going to be your baseball time. And I think we did a really good job of separating it, but I think I got a chance to see my brother actually go through it. And I never called him dad. It was Coach Brownlee. People would laugh at us, because we'd be at family functions and my brother and I both would call my dad Coach Brownlee. You know, and so I just think we had a good balance with the separation of, okay, there's going to be coach time and baseball time, and then there's going to be family time as well.
Interesting. Love it. Want to get into the youth and travel ball a little bit. Some of the things that you guys are working on, or you're working on, because your liaison between them, what's the importance there? What's the goal?
You know, and that was with Andrew Bartman and Jeremy Sheetner. They started that side of it. It was something that we didn't have, and it's a big part of baseball. And that is the initial... That's going to be a kid's first experience with baseball is on the youth side. So we need to be a part of that to help coaches, because again, we want kids to keep playing. And, you know, Andrew said that last Sunday at the USA Baseball Clinic, he was like, don't be a kid's last coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you hear it all the time. If you've done your job as a youth coach, you've done your job if everybody on your team wants to play the next year. If everybody that you coach this year, if you're coaching an 8U team, a 9U team, a Little League team, a Pony League team, if every kid that came in contact with you that year wants to play baseball again next year, you've done your job. And you hear that all the time, but it's true. Try to make it a great experience with proper practice planning, with having great energy. And travel baseball is so big now. Again, we have to try to help on all sides. One, keep kids healthy, and then want them to keep playing baseball.
And that was going to be my next question, was the travel ball, because, you know, there's at all levels, you're going to have good, average, and fantastic coaches, and you're going to learn from all levels. I've learned from youth coaches, from players, you know, everybody. I mean, you could always learn something. The travel industry, what advice would you give coaches out there in travel baseball to make their programs better? Yeah, I'm sure you've learned some from, you know, listening to some of the podcasts or maybe doing some podcasts with travel guys. You know, what are some things that they can become better at?
I think first we need to try to get everybody under the same umbrella from a pitch smart standpoint. During our meeting at the convention, I think those are still the big questions. Is not every tournament out there is under the same pitch rules, and so there's confusion out there for coaches and for players and for parents. Is like, okay, what rule, what guidelines are we playing under? Now that's a huge undertaking to try to get everybody under the same umbrella and get everybody to adopt pitch smart. Is that the best thing? So that's kind of where we're trying to move the needle forward, but that's going to take a long time to do that. And I think there's a way to keep kids healthy and do it the right way. And that's where the parents have to get involved as well. From the travel side, though, it's grown so much. But again, your responsibility to your players is it's the same model. Make sure you keep them healthy and then make sure they want to keep playing. You know, those are your two responsibilities. If a kid stays healthy, you take an 8-year-old kid. If that 8-year-old kid has the opportunity to keep playing baseball, if he stays healthy, he's going to have a much better opportunity of actually reaching his potential. If kids get banged up, you know, it does set kids back if they're hurt. Plus, if a kid continues to get hurt in any sport, what's the likelihood that they're going to want to keep playing that sport?
Absolutely. Agree 100%. And the other area, you know, I can't remember if it was Sheets had a show on this, but I know I was listening to a podcast and they were talking to a travel program. I believe it was an ABCA podcast.
Yep.
And the travel program, it was refreshing, because what this travel program was doing is they were emphasizing more, and we know this from many studies, science studies, they're training players more than they are actually playing games. They're still playing a lot of games. The problem is sometimes travel baseball, they tend to play only games all year round.
And that's when you look at the model that is out, and it comes from the soccer side. The recommended, especially for the younger groups, is that, you know, 2/3 practice, 1/3 games. You know, and it's a tough model right now because that's not where we're at. And but if we're really concerned about what's best for the athlete and the kid, that's where we need to try to continue. And on the youth stage, Zach Dillon, he works for KD-12 program. His talk was on building a travel organization. It's really good. So for anybody out there that maybe wasn't at the convention or hasn't watched that video, it's Zach Dillon. He and I coached at Iowa together. He played at Baylor. He played in the Orioles organization, coached at Baylor. But his talk on how to actually run a youth travel organization was great. From an implementation, but also how to balance the practice side and the competitive side, I thought it was great information. So for anybody out there that wants to pick up some info on that, go look at Zach Dillon's speech on the youth stage.
Yeah, I'm gonna be one of those guys because I definitely missed
it. It was great because he basically brought it from the start, how they started it, and then how they've continued to evolve, and then how they do it now. And they have 8U teams all the way up to 18U teams.
You know, that's great, and it's gonna take organizations like that to show other organizations that it can be done. And I know, you know, I'm fortunate, luckily, to travel different countries, and when you look at the Cubans, you look at some top countries like Japan, you know, they practice more than they play. Everybody
yes.
thinks they play a lot more games, but those just aren't the facts. Ryan, big one here, and then, you know, we'll go ahead and get into a little bit of the coaching aspect. the communication now between the high school coaches and the travel coaches, that's got to be important too. Yep. Was that addressed in some of the talks?
It is, but again, each state is different with that. You know, and it's hard to legislate that because every state's going to be a little bit different with who runs summer baseball, who doesn't run summer baseball. And sure. Again, it boils down to communication with the player and the parent with the coaches that they're involved with. And that's where the parents need to be parents. Mm-hmm. It's fine to have your son on multiple teams, but it's not the coach's responsibility. I know everybody, I may get killed for this, but it really is ultimately up to the parent to communicate with the coach that, hey, he just threw 30 pitches yesterday, or he was at a showcase and he threw yesterday, or he was at a camp. That's where there has to be open lines of communication between everybody involved. Because again, it's the most important thing is keeping kids healthy. And I don't care what age it is. It might be a professional baseball player trying to keep those guys healthy too. But that's where people have to communicate. And you have to get everybody that's involved. I don't care if it's the trainers or the strength coaches. Everybody needs to get at the same table and communicate, because that's what you do at the college level. I mean, the college coaches are talking to the trainers, the strength coaches. They're communicating with their players. I mean, it's a good model with trying to keep guys healthy, and it shouldn't be any different with a 12-year-old kid or a 14-year-old kid. There needs to be communication and workload, and that's how you manage the workload for kids, for overhand throwers, is through communication, because if you don't, then kids are going to get injured. And I say it all the time, it's not earth-shattering. This is simple math. For every pitch that's thrown competitively, they need an hour of rest. So the simple math is, if they throw 20 pitches, they might be able to come back and throw the next day, depending on their age. If not, if they throw over 24 pitches, they need a day off. And you can maybe go back-to-back days of throwing 20 pitches or less. They throw 2 days in a row, they're probably going to need to be shut down for a couple days. And that, again, that's just simple math. For one pitch thrown competitively, they need an hour of rest.
You know, great advice. Love to hear that. I want to get into the coaching a little bit. And obviously, like you said, you've been in it 22 years at the collegiate level. Some of the things that, it's kind of interesting. Some of the things that maybe in the last few years of your coaching career, because I know now with the ABC, you're traveling and doing coaching programs. What are some of the things that you changed in your philosophy and your kind of teaching?
A lot changed just from, I think, terminology. I think as a coach, your terminology may change, and especially now with the technology that's out there, your terminology is going to change with the technology. Some coaching cues stayed the same. Some of the drills changed over time, or a lot of it, what you saw is the training with the implementation of driveline and what Cressy was doing. You started to see, the dynamic warm-up change, the recovery changed with Mark Pro and some of the game ready stuff that's out there. I think that's what changed more than anything. And I think that's why you're seeing guys throw harder now, is the training side is different, but the recovery side has gotten much better as well. I think that's where you saw some of the big changes. And then some of the things stayed the same, but you would always pick up stuff, along the way that looked cool, or we're at least going to try it. What I felt like changed for me from 22 years, from year one, when you're out, it's really hard when you first get into coaching. And I coached at Evansville when I got done playing. Coaching guys that you played with, I think, is the most difficult thing that you can do as a coach, because they know your BS and you've been in those rooms with those guys. It's true. They do know your BS. They know how you are away from the field, and you're real. Those are real things. And when you now try to coach those guys, if you don't handle it right, there can be some issues. But I did separate, and that's learning from my dad and brother. I got a lot of inexpensive experience from my dad and brother, because my brother went through it as well. My brother played at Evansville and then coached at Evansville with my dad for a long time. My brother was really good as far as giving me tips, and that was whether I wanted to hear it or not. And I think you need guys like that in your life. You need somebody that's going to be willing to tell you. And even when I was coaching and my brother was done coaching, and social media, my brother was kind of my social media Silencer, he would tell me to take stuff down, or he would text me and be like, hey, you're being an idiot right now. And I think you need that from somebody to be honest with you. But my brother helped me with that a lot. He's like, hey, if you're going to get into this, you're going to have to separate. So I wouldn't hang out with the guys that I played with. And that was a hard thing, but to keep it professional, and that's been a professional baseball forever. Don't fraternize. It's simple things like, if you go to a bar and guys are in there, leave. Or if you're there and they show up, then they need to leave. Those are simple things. And I know that's hard now because everybody wants to be friends, and social media does bring everybody together. But if you want to be a good coach, you have to be able to separate. And there has to be some professionalism with handling your guys. And especially as a young assistant coach, you have to keep it professional because, yes, you're in their peer range, so they're going to go to you for things. You have to keep it professional because you're not the one that's putting their name in the lineup. And the head coach is the one that's putting their name in the lineup. And if you're buddy-buddy with the guys that you're coaching, and yes, you can have a great relationship with those guys and have great communication with those guys, but eventually you have to stick to what your head coach is doing. Because if you don't, then it's going to cause problems. Because you know what? You're going to be the first person that kid goes to, the guy that you're buddy-buddy with. If his name's not in the lineup or he's not getting to pitch very much, you're going to be the first person that he goes to ask questions why.
Interesting. Yep. Love that. You've got an advantage, obviously. You know, you travel around the country. You're not only speaking at coaches' programs, but you're also listening to coaches talk. So you see different perspectives, different type of philosophies. What's something that Ryan Brownlee has picked up in the last couple of years that kind of, was that wow moment for you? It said, man, this is pretty good. I gotta use this.
I think a lot of it was just the training side of it with arm care, of trying to push at times. And from the strength training standpoint, we were always pretty aggressive at Evansville. So I think that kind of helped continue through coaching of trying to push guys into the weight room. A lot of it is just terminology. For me, the next step of where everything is going is what's going on with the on-base use stuff from the mobility standpoint. I think we're learning so much more now with K-Vest and some of the technology out there of how the swing actually works or how throwing actually works. I think it's easier for guys to make adjustments now because they can actually see if they're sequencing right. But then on the on-base use side of it, you're answering better questions for guys, and then you're figuring out that you may be asking them to do something that physically they're not capable of doing from a mobility standpoint. So I think that's alleviating some conversations with coaches because you may be asking somebody to do something that they're not physically capable of doing. So I think it makes that a little bit easier. And that's been kind of the aha moment for me with what's going on there with the on-base use stuff is, okay, these are making easier conversations. And then with Rapsodo and Edgartronic, it's much easier for guys to be able to make some adjustments because they're seeing things much easier because it's slower for them. Even with the cameras, the old school cameras that we use, the video cassettes, and you're breaking guys down, it's a lot easier for guys to make adjustments now. Just because the technology is much easier for them. And with the virtual reality stuff that's out there now, I think you're going to see a huge step in the virtual reality side of things because players are going to be able to get reps without some of the physical banging around. From the hitting side, they're able to take some mental reps and actually see guys that they're facing with the headsets on where they're not getting beat up taking 500 swings. They can take 500 swings without swinging a bat.
Yeah, you know what? And I do love the technology. I've been trying to follow it the best I can. I'll tell you what, those are callers. We're not taking callers today. We're going to put them on hold. We don't have that ability today, but they're listening to the show and they must really like it because they don't stop ringing.
They probably want to yell at me for something that I said.
Yeah, remember you said earlier that something. Technology I love from, I'm trying to keep up with it, but I love it because, it also, validates a lot of the things that we're trying to teach, make sure we're doing it correctly.
Yep.
Have you ever had a situation where you were thinking a certain technique or a certain area that you were working on and it was almost like it was natural? The body just did it naturally, but we were trying to teach it another way.
I think every coach goes through that. You know, especially when you first get into it and your heart's in the right place because you want to help your players. And as young coaches, like, you're so passionate about it and you see something that maybe can help a guy. So you're going to jump all in. And, I think I got better as I got older of, okay, let's see first, and I think the pro side does this too. I think you do need to wait and see and see if a kid can do it the way that he's doing it right now. And I think that's human nature as a player. If you're having success doing what you're doing, there's really no reason to change that until you start to taste a little bit of failure. And then if a kid comes to you and wants to make some adjustments, then okay, let's start to make some adjustments. But it's okay to just sit back and see if a kid can be successful doing it the way that he does it, because then that makes your life easier as a coach too. I know everybody wants to say, hey, I did this with this guy and he's having success now. And I think that's people wanting to puff their chest up a little bit, like, okay, look at me, I helped him. And let's try to let a kid roll for a little bit here and see if he can do it, because that's going to make your life a lot easier as a coach. If he's successful doing it the way he's doing it, then you can work with somebody else who maybe needs some help.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, in coaching, you hear this a lot. I've heard it for many years. Always try to share things, or, you know, coaches are great thieves. You know, they steal from other coaches.
Definitely.
Because, you know, that's how you always learn it. And I'm 100% believer in that. And boy, I've stolen a lot in my lifetime. But the other thing I want to talk about is, you know, encouraging coaches to come up with some of the things on their own a little bit through trial and error. You know, is there something that in your career that you came up that nobody taught you that maybe can help our coaches out there? You know, something that, you know, through working with your players, you know, you almost, it was almost like that light bulb went off and you said, you know, we're going to try this, and all of a sudden it worked.
You know, some of the drills we did at Iowa, you know, I loved the off season at Iowa. You know, once we got done with fall ball, we would get into our cage time, and that was my time. We were using the pro cut bats. You know, Tim Nolan out of Rockford, I don't think he makes them anymore, but
no,
the weights steel that would go into the end of the bats, I was big on that. And this is early 2000s. Now I stole some of this from Chuck Bartlett. When I was at James Madison, we didn't have anything fancy, but we would tape bats up. You know, we were doing overload, underload training at JMU in the late 90s, just because we felt like it was helping our guys and help develop some strength. And some of it was conditioning. You know, they'd get into some, you know, again, somebody might kill me on this, but they were taking 17, 18 quick reps in a row. So some of it was conditioning and working through it a little bit. But, you know, Justin Toole, who's on the Indians big league staff now, he would send me some stuff. We had a drill. It was a three-plate drill. I actually stole it from the Japanese, you know, because they were using it for pitchers a little bit too, with different timing for bullpens. So we brought that into hitting, where, you know, whether it's with a machine or overhand toss or front toss, where they're taking swings from the back plate, then moving up to the middle plate, then the front plate, and then working its way back. And Justin called me last year. He goes, I just did this with our minor league guys, and they thought this was earth-shattering. And he goes, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, we were doing this in the cages at Iowa in 2007. You know, and that's gratifying at times. You know, some of the infield throwing program stuff that we did, you would add some new things in here and there. You know, but that came over time too. That was when I got to Iowa. It was 2003, the fall of 2003. I had coached 6 years up to that point. But I was lucky to be around some really good coaches growing up, and then in my early coaching career to be around my dad and brother, and then Spanky McFarland and Chuck Bartlett and Jay Sullinger at James Madison. Was really fortunate to be around really good guys on those staffs, but then also go work camps. You know, at the time I got to JMU in 2000, you know, everybody worked camps together. So you would go work Virginia Wesleyan's camp, you would go work Old Dominion's camp, you would work the Best of Virginia camp in the summer. I was also coaching in the summer, you know, coached 2 summers in the Cape, coached 2 summers in the CICL with the Quincy Gems, coached in New York 1 summer. I think though all of those things, you know, everything that you do adds to your experience along the way, you know, good and bad. So I just was really lucky that most of the places that I was at, I was surrounded by great people, really good clinicians, and also coaches that were going to allow me to do some trial and error stuff too, that were patient with me as a young coach. And you know, I think you need help along the way, and we all need help, you know, and hopefully you're surrounded by people that are going to allow you to make mistakes and not completely crush you for those mistakes. I'm not always the best at that at times, but I just was really lucky that I was surrounded by some great people.
Yeah, great advice. Ryan, what does Ryan Brownlee do? You know, you're constantly learning. I mean, first of all, you have no – there's nothing else you can do. You're in coaching all the time. You're always talking to people. You're learning something new. But what's something you do outside of the ABCA, outside of the coaching programs that you guys do to learn on on your own?
I'm big into personal development. This has all been trial and error. I think we're all trying to find ways to keep ourselves healthy. I have fairly set routines now, I think, as a 45-year-old. My kids are old now. My family's still in Illinois, so being out in North Carolina, they're coming out this summer. That's allowed me some space from a personal development standpoint. So I have some pretty good routines, morning routines, which have changed and evolved over time. I talked to a young coach this morning. I think it's hard when you first get into it and you just have kids. For any parents out there that have little kids, like, all bets are off from a personal development standpoint. Like, you see guys out there doing all this stuff, like, do what you can. You know, when you first have little kids, like, you're white knuckling it. There's no playbook for marriage. There's no playbook for having kids. A lot of it is just white knuckling your way through. Now, as you get older, I think it's a lot easier to add things into your routine. I get up around the same time every morning. I will do transcendental meditation in the morning. One of my former players, Kevin Lee, at Iowa, he went to Harvard and got his master's. But he and I bounce a lot of things off of each other. He actually came to Western when I was there and took our team through transcendental meditation, which actually found some positive results for our guys. But as soon as I wake up, I'll brush my teeth. I'll splash some water on my face. I'll do TM for about 15, 20 minutes, and then I'll get into some sort of yoga. I taught yoga at Western for the last 2 years in the rec building. I would take our guys through yoga. I just think it's a great way for recovery. I think it's great for mobility. And then I'll mix some other workouts in. You know, I don't have a gym membership, so a lot of it's on my own. I will get into a yoga studio. We have a yoga studio here called Radiance that does have some hot options. I think for athletes, probably hot, and they need to stay away from the dehydration standpoint, mm-hmm. and also holding some poses. You know, you're seeing it. Some guys are overstretched already. They're too lax, so they maybe don't need to hold poses for very long. I think vinyasa flow is great for athletes because it's one breath, one movement, where they're going to get into a movement, they're going to take a breath, they're going to move on to their next movement. I think that equates well to athletes, and that's the yoga that we were taking our guys through at Western was the vinyasa, the flow part of it. Other than that, I do try to drink a lot of water. I think that was the one habit change that, you know, you talk about the one thing that changes and opens a lot of other things up. When I started to drink more water throughout the day, my bottle, my shaker bottle, my glass, my Yeti is with me at all hours. So I don't ever not have that with me. It was much easier to make those switches with drinking more water because the water was with me. And that became an automatic habit. I don't even think about drinking water anymore because it's with me, so I'll just drink water. But yeah, I'm big into the personal development side of it. And I am tinkering around with things. I've tinkered around with intermittent fasting. I don't eat after 8 o'clock. That's one of the things that I added that in last year. The taking the notifications off my phone is something that I added in. I think that's earth shattering because I think everybody feels like they're really important. Take notifications off your phone for a while. Like, unless you're a doctor, like, mm-hmm. no one's going to die. You know, if you take your notifications off your phone for a little bit, like, the world's not going to end. And that allowed me to be in a little better place in the present moment throughout the day, because it's not a ding, it's not a vibrate, and you're looking at your phone. Those are things that I think have helped me be in a much healthier headspace, besides the TM in the morning and then doing some sort of activity in the morning. But I do get up early. Getting up earlier allows me to be able to get all those things in, where if I'm waking up at 9 o'clock, then it's going to be a mad scramble to try to get anything done.
Wow. I thought I was heading in the right direction.
No. And this is judge free. I tell people, this
I gotta
is
add meditation.
No, hey, this is not yoga. To judge. Like, I just, you got to find what works. And
absolutely,
we're all on our own path. Everybody's got their own journey. And, you know, what works for me may not work for you. And it's, each person has to find what works for them. Like, it's fine to pick up bits and pieces from people, but ultimately it's your own path. And so what works for you, find what works for you, and don't judge, and don't say, hey, 'cause it works for me, it's going to work for somebody else. I would never say, hey, you need to do this. I will talk about it, but it's not like, hey, you need to do this. It's like, okay, here's what I do. It works for me. It may not work for you. And I think that's on the coaching side and the playing side as well. You know, what works for one coach may not work for you as a coach. Mm-hmm. And I think I was lucky along the way because of my dad and then coaching for Spanky at JMU and then for Jack Dom at Iowa. They were all completely different people, personalities. They were all completely different people from what they believed from a faith-based standpoint. That was great for me to be around guys that were completely different, and they all had success. So it just showed me, like, okay, just be yourself. You know, and I think the guys want that from you too. Just be yourself. Don't be fake. You know, if you're yourself, and you know what, if somebody doesn't like you and you're being yourself, that's their issue. That's not your issue. Like, if you're being your true self, and somebody's going to think less of you for that, that's their fault. That's their issue. That's not your issue as a person.
Mm, love it. And the other thing is, you know, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to at least try some of these things, because if you don't try them, you don't know if you like them or not.
Hey,
if it fits within your system.
Stress less, accomplish more. And I've said this a lot. Stress Less, Accomplish More by Emily Fletcher is a great place to start if you're looking to try to get into meditation. And she explains it great. It's meditation for high achievers.
Yeah.
And I think where people get sideways with some of the mindfulness and meditation that's out there is they think they're going to get their brain to turn off. You're always going to have those thoughts. But what it allows you to do is redirect those thoughts to a better place. So you're going to still have those negative thoughts. Even when I was coaching, there was times where I still would get frustrated, where I'd want to punch somebody or punch something, like, and I'd get frustrated, but it allowed me to redirect a little bit better. And I felt like I made much better decisions because I was redirecting better.
Brian, we're coming to close to the end. We got a few more questions.
Yep.
I just want to ask you, you know, I'm going to jump a little bit here. When it comes to, you know, practice organization, obviously could be a whole topic.
Yep.
And hours and hours of it. But just in general, you know, what are the, when you're talking about organizing a practice or running a practice, what are some consistencies that need to be done in the practices? Three or four things that you kind of have to do all the time or most of the time that you would emphasize.
And I think there's much smarter and better coaches out there than me to talk about this. But Joe Eisenman was on the youth stage as well. He's going to be on the podcast with me in May. He's big on long-term athlete development. I think the warm-up, especially for young kids, I think the warm-up is the most important part to help them ingrain good, healthy habits as they get older. And you're helping them be better movers as they get older. Like I said, if you coach an 8U team, 0.5% of those kids may play in high school. You know, a majority of those kids aren't even going to play in high school, but you can help them become healthier and better movers. So some sort of warm-up before you get into any other activities. So I always felt like warming up and then some sort of base running was the best place to start. Then you get in, you're throwing individual defense side of it and then mix some team defense in and hitting. And you can do the same thing with youth kids. Mm-hmm. And don't spend a whole lot of time on one thing. If you're going to do an hour and a half practice, especially for the youth kids, go 4 or 5 minutes on one thing and then move on to the next thing. You know, when we talked about microdosing with Dr. Eisenman, if you do those small things every day and you practice 3 days a week over an extended period of time, there's going to be huge ramifications in a good way for kids. But make it your own too, and keep it different. Don't get into the same thing over and over and over again. Try to make it different for kids. And that's where they're going to become better learners too. If it's the same thing over and over, that's where it becomes a habit. And so then once it becomes on automatic overdrive, they're not thinking about it anymore. Do try to switch it up. So they're having to be mindful about practice, and they're having to be mindful about things. I think it's going to help them be smarter down the road too, as well, because they're developing new pathways as well.
Well, there may be better people out there than this, but that was pretty good.
No, I appreciate it. But honestly, I think the guys that, especially at the college level, I think the guys that are doing a great job out there, obviously Coach Corbin at Vandy does a great job. I think Dan Heefner is one of the better guys out there from a practice planning and competing standpoint. And this isn't this generation of kids' fault. This is the way they've been raised. They don't compete for a lot growing up, and that's okay. But you have to realize that once you get them in high school or college, that they probably haven't competed for a whole lot, which is okay. Like, you can bellyache about it, but that's just the way kids are. You can develop those competitive games in practice, and that might not just be baseball. That may be, let's kick the soccer ball around, but let's try to score here in soccer or anything. Let's compete a little bit more to allow them to have fun competing. I think, you know, a lot of kids haven't competed in anything except for video games. And for me, gaming was fine. I was a kid that went to the arcade a lot when I was growing up. People like to bash on gaming. I loved going to the arcade. I did. I loved gaming. I had Nintendo growing up. I had a Sega growing up. I loved gaming. But kids don't get as much now from a competing standpoint. I think you have to allow kids to get caught up a little bit from the competition standpoint. So within your practice planning, yes, there needs to be that skill instruction. But let's do skill instruction with competing, where they're now having fun competing, because most kids haven't competed at all. So they think compete, they think tight, and they think hard instead of, okay, enjoy the competition, enjoy competing, have fun competing. Yes, there's going to be a winner and loser, but allow kids to enjoy competing and teach them how to enjoy competing. They're going to be much better when it's the bottom of the seventh inning and the game's on the line, because they've competed a little bit and had fun competing. And you see it at the highest levels. I don't care if it's athletes, rock performers, theater people, people that perform in the ballet, the best ones, they enjoy that. They enjoy the competition side of it, and they get excitement from that, and it's not debilitating. They really, really enjoy it, but they've been trained to enjoy that side of it too. So I think as coaches, we need to really get them in the mindset that competing is enjoying, and enjoying the competition side of things.
You know, Ryan, I think you hit on a golden nugget. I think you hit on a hot topic, one of the best topics that I think coaches can really concentrate on. So here's how we're going to end it. Since you brought that up, I think it's fantastic. I want you to give our coaches in the U.S. and around the world, to give us a couple examples of something you might set up, or even one example, how you might set something up that's competitive that might translate into a real game situation.
Even in catch play, have them keep points for hitting a target. I mean, just simple things. Like, you don't just have to get out there and play catch. Have them move their target around and have them keep track of points for throwing to each other. Same thing in the cage. If it's a tee, if they're hitting off the tee, that's fine. Have them keep points for an external target. Okay, it might be an L screen. It might be the back of the cage. It might be if we're going oppo. It might be if we're going pull side. That's where you can have them keep track, and that's where they'll enjoy the competition part, but they're also then kind of seeing where they're at too. And that's where you can keep track of those points for guys. So I think this generation of kids, more than anything, and again, it's not their fault. They're self-centered, but that's okay. It's okay that they're self-centered. Allow them to track and see their improvement. You know, kids are going to enjoy it if they see, okay, you know what? I hit four to the back of the cage yesterday. Let's see if I can get five today. Okay. And that's where kids really start to enjoy the development side of it. Okay. You hit the glove. We're playing catch today. You hit the glove five times in a row yesterday. Let's see if you can hit it six in a row today. All right. And that's where they're starting to self-evaluate a little bit. I think that allows kids to enjoy competing better, but also be able to self-evaluate and track better as well.
Fantastic. Ryan, where are you off to next? You got some programs coming up?
I've been doing a little bit of the college side, just kind of going to watch guys and sending out stuff that way. But in Cary, North Carolina, April 1st through the 6th, I think it is, that national high school tournament's going on in Cary. So I'm going to head over there. They've got 16 of the best teams in the country coming over to Cary for that week. And then I'll continue to do some of the college side of it, and then the podcast. So it'll slow down a little bit here from a travel standpoint, but in the middle of May, I'm going to go back in April and watch Jackson run in a track meet at Western. And then in the middle of the May, I'll go back and get the family moved out here. So hopefully by early June, everybody's moved out and we can start getting the family, acclimated to North Carolina.
All right, Ryan, really appreciate it. I know what your busy schedule, man, jumping on the podcast.
Anytime, Pete. Man, and I want to thank you, too, because you're doing so much for baseball, not just in the States, but internationally. And I love that you're so passionate about baseball. And the more guys like you that we can get involved with everything, the game of baseball is in a great place. And I think that's what I've learned more than anything with the podcast and with going. And I knew this since 1979, but it's reaffirming when you talk to baseball guys and how our game is in such a great place. I think we have more room for growth, but the game of baseball is in a great place from a coaching standpoint. I think this is the best time that's ever been for baseball coaches.
All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. And folks, that was Ryan Brownlee, Assistant Executive Director of the ABCA. He's also the Coaching Outreach Program.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.